Gentlemen, boys, and girls, welcome to another edition of the More Phenomenal Hockey Show. It is I, Michael, and I'm being joined from the Nation Network. You've seen him on Leafs Nation and The Sheet with Jeff Merrick. He's actually the producer of that show, the one and only Zach Phillips. Zach, welcome to the show, bud.
Thanks for having me, Michael. I appreciate it. I'm looking forward to doing this here.
Yeah, this is awesome. But before we hop into the fun, real quick, the More Phenomenal Hockey Show is also brought to you by Oats Overnight. When we're on the go but still need breakfast, Oats Overnight is the healthy on-the-go breakfast choice for the show and TXHT Hockey. Use our exclusive link in the description on both TXHTHockey.com and in the YouTube show description to get a $20 discount on Oats Overnight today. That's good stuff right there. I'm looking at some pouches and I still need to eat them.
That's what I need. I need the oats overnight, like the pre-made. I make my own. My girlfriend and I live together here now. So, I mean, I shouldn't say I make my own. She does a lot of that stuff, but still like a hassle to have to do it and prepare it. So I got to get myself some of those.
It comes with the shaker. First order always comes with the shaker. You just put the milk in, however much you want, pour the oats in, shake that sucker up, throw it in the fridge. You're good to go.
I need some of that. Make my life easier. Yeah.
And if you have a Costco or a Sam's Club, they have boxes there with tumblers already, so you can give it a try that way too.
Perfect.
But with that said, we could talk oats overnight all we want, but we're here to talk hockey. You know, we're going to start up. There's been a lot of interesting things happening over the last 2 weeks. We've had some very interesting coaching changes, obviously some general manager firings, and of course, as those who are watching on YouTube, I'm wearing my Alex Ovechkin rookie jersey. Alex Ovechkin is obviously a big focus right now. Like, the NHL Twitter is just all Ovechkin Crosby right now, today, as we record this on Friday, April 10th. Let's hop into coaches first. So, Zach, obviously last week Bruce Cassidy was fired in Vegas and John Tortorella was brought in with 8 games left in the regular season. They're in playoff position, but they still made that move. And then this past weekend, we saw Patrick Waugh get fired on the Long Island with Pete DeBoer coming in. Now, one difference between the two of them is that Tortorella is only until the end of this season, just like Rick Bonus in Columbus. But DeBoer got the rest of the season plus a few extra years. What are some of your thoughts when you see these coaching changes, especially for teams that are either in the playoffs or on the bubble of trying to make the playoffs, you know, this late in the season?
Well, I think two very different situations. They do have similarities, but what I would say kind of the main differences between the two, obviously you just outlined the fact that Pete DeBoer comes in and it's not a, hey, fix this thing and let's see what happens and then we'll determine your future, which I think is automatically the biggest difference for the Islanders. And I'll start on that one. The one thing, it did surprise me a little bit, to be honest with you, that the Islanders did fire Patrick Waugh with 4 games left in the season. It did come up as a little bit of a shock, but I look at that group and I think a few different things probably took place there for the Islanders to speed that up. And something, obviously, what I'm going to say is probably not, you know, like earth shattering that nobody really knows, but it makes sense to me. One of which being the Islanders were on a skid. And they were a team that was sitting in a playoff spot, not comfortably, obviously, but they were sitting in one. And I think they had gone on a 4-game slide, and Matthew Darche probably looks around and goes, it's too bad because you don't want this season to slip away. You don't want these guys to kind of end off the year on a sour note where they're all looking around, losing that kind of, having the voice of Patrick Waugh lost in the room where he loses the guys and then it kind of can just turn a little bit ugly and sour at the end. So they probably maybe look at it that way. The main reason though, I think that one takes place is getting ahead of everybody else. You know, there's a team that you brought up there, the Vegas Golden Knights. They go and get ahead of it. They may not hire Tortorella in the summer, and I think it's probably unlikely that Pete DeBoer has a reunion in Vegas. But you know, crazier things have happened, and I wouldn't put it past the Golden Knights.
But
Then I
also
also
on
look.
Tortorella, one could say that he may just be coming in just for this little run. He may not want to be a coach long term and just wants to be like that temporary fix in a way.
Potentially, I do think Torts wants to coach, though. I don't know if it works out for him long term in Vegas, but I think that this gives him an opportunity to showcase himself here again. And, you know, the Torts thing, too, there as well, like he has had young teams over the last couple of seasons. And I don't think Torts at this point in his career wants to really be taking on young teams. I think he wants to take on more veteran teams that give him a better chance to win. That's what Vegas does. And maybe it ends up being an audition where he comes out of the summer and there can be some type of competition that heats up between some of the teams that want to be more competitive and are looking for a new direction. Maybe it's Nashville. Maybe it's staying in Vegas. Maybe the Oilers job opens up and that's a spot where they'd look at him, right? Like he's going to look at some of those teams that he thinks are closer and wants to be around those. So that could be an audition. But like that one would be interesting, a spot opening up there. But that's kind of where I come back to, even on the DeBoer thing with the Islanders. I think they wanted to get ahead of this and get ahead of the market and get Pete DeBoer in here before other teams had the opportunity to get to him. I think the Leafs would have been a team that would have been heavily interested in Pete DeBoer. Would he have wanted that job? I don't know. But, you know, they could have offered him a crazy amount of money to come in here and do it. Would the Oilers job open up? Would he be interested in that one? I think probably more likely than the Leafs. So you can kind of beat the competition to it. And I think Pete probably looks at that team with Matthew Barzell, Matthew Schaefer, and says, we could do something here and maybe I could fix this and we win four games to close out the year and we get back in the playoffs. That's great. If not, I've got a head start on next season as well.
Yeah, and it's interesting about Tortorella. You mentioned the Oilers, and there's a conversation my dad and I have had when Tortorella left the Flyers. It's no secret on this show, my dad's a huge Philadelphia Flyers fan. And you know, you touched on something very, very true about Tortorella. He's had young teams the last several years that he's coached, and the one team my dad said that could ultimately use a guy like John Tortorella is the Edmonton Oilers, because they need somebody who's going to come in and bring that accountability that is needed. And he's doing that obviously now with Vegas, like as you put it, like maybe as an audition to some of these other teams. So I do agree with that sentiment that with Tortorella, you know, this is probably the best fit for him right now, because I don't think he would have gone to the island to deal with a much younger team in that sense. Well, it's an older team, but it's also a slower team. Let's be honest about the Islanders a little bit.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, the other thing too, I'll say with Torts, just going back to Philly, it's kind of unfortunate. And I don't know if a lot of people maybe realize it as much, but he is a pretty good fit for those younger teams. And I think it's kind of unfortunate for him. And I know a lot of people are going to hear that and think that I'm, you know, crazy saying that. But what I mean is he's adapted a lot. You know, obviously he had the little clip there where he talked about Trevor Zegras and the Michigan, and we all know about that, but I don't think it's widely known how much John Tortorella loves players like that. And we talked about it on the sheet at one point. I think we had Rocky Thompson on, and he kind of brought up the fact that Torts was like a big believer in bringing in a guy like Trevor Zegras. Now, obviously, he's not getting to kind of see that thing through, but he was the guy who was on board with players like that and having those kinds of guys, because I think he can mold guys to still have creativity, but to buy into the other side of it. And I think earlier in his career, he was way more of a hard ass psychopath than what he is now. And I say that in the best way possible. Like that's how the older day coaches were. You know, they were a little over the top. They would kind of be mean or whatever. I think he's adapted and I think he's good for those younger teams, but I just don't think he has any interest in being a part of that. Like I think this guy wants to win. And when you go into a Flyers locker room, with all due respect to the Flyers, he knows like this team is not winning. Even if we can get to the playoffs, this team is not going to win. So what now? Because I'm just going to be stuck here. And the other problem for Torts, Michael, you know this, and your dad would have seen this with him with the Flyers, shelf life. He's got a shelf life. You know, he's not going to be a guy who goes to Vegas and is there for the next 8 years. It's not happening.
A lot of coaches are like that. Like Peter Laviolette is like
Yep.
literally by the time you get midway through that second year on Peter Laviolette, it's kind of like that. Like the fact that he lasted all 3 years with the Capitals, I think he only lasted like what, two with the Rangers when he was supposed to go full three. You know,
Yeah.
so it's like, yeah, a lot of coaches, and actually, to be honest, you know, DeBoer kind of has a bit of a shelf life to him as well.
Yeah, he does.
Yeah, so it's like, you know, it, and it's kind of interesting because we're gonna, I want to now touch base. I want to transition over to the Leafs. We'll talk about the general manager situation in a little bit because I have an interesting name for you on that one that has not been discussed because
Okay.
I'm not data centric. I'm kind of like Brian Burke in a way where I look at with what my eyes are telling me and what, you know, the character of the player is as well. But Craig Berube is only in his second year. And I remember one, I think it might have been Jay Rosehill on Leafs Nation. He says, "What do you do if you fire Berube and bring in somebody else? Is it just going to be the same thing over and over and over again from the last several coaches with the core that this team has?" My mindset is you keep Berube and you use that as a foundation to rebuild the culture within that locker room because of the fact that like Berube will bring accountability. You saw it when he did it in St. Louis. He did it also in Philadelphia, even though that was kind of a little murky thing for him because I think they're in between general managers in a way when a lot of that was going down. But like he's a proven coach, just like DeBoer, just like Tortorella and all these other guys. But you can't always keep firing the coach when a team like the Leafs have had this core for like almost 10 years. Something's got to give. Otherwise, you're going to start looking. Because remember back when Crosby was younger and he went through a few coaches, they're saying that Crosby was a coach killer. Could is Auston Matthews a coach killer? Is William Nylander a coach killer?
So, is Connor McDavid a coach killer?
Yeah, see, that's the thing. They go through so many coaches because of shelf life. You know,
Yeah,
sometimes
that's the
it's
only
an
thing is
interesting
like
thing.
I yeah, so look, I completely understand where a lot of people are coming from on it, and I struggle with it myself, where on one hand, I kind of feel like you are letting the players off the hook a little bit, because at the end, you just say, oh, we'll fire the coach and nothing will be done. But that was more of the frustration that I experienced when the core four was still assembled. You know, John Tavares was still at his peak. Matthews, Nylander, Marner were all still here. That was kind of more so what I was feeling in that, because I kept looking at the on-ice product, and then I looked at what happened with those guys when they got to the playoffs, and then it was very clear, you know, there were coaching deficiencies, sure, but it wasn't the coach's fault necessarily. And let's also keep in mind, like, they're also only still on their third coach. Sheldon Keefe has been in this position for a long time. And to be honest with you, had Mike Babcock not been just a complete dickhead, he probably would have lasted longer with the Maple Leafs as well. Like, that's one of the reasons why he was out. It wasn't because he's too mean. It's legitimately because he was doing things you should probably never be doing in a locker room, and
How long did he last
former
in
players
Columbus
hated him.
again? How long did he
Yeah,
last in Columbus
exactly.
again? He didn't even make it to the
Exactly.
preseason. He
Yeah,
didn't
he's
even make it to
looking at
training
guys'
camp.
phones. Yes, right.
Oh.
So, you know, they burned through that one, but I don't think that was the player's fault. I think that was Mike Babcock's fault. And then they kept Sheldon Keefe for a long time. But the point of don't let the players off the hook and fire the coach was more relevant to me when it was like Sheldon Keefe's job on the line, because each time I could point to the problem being on them and not on Sheldon Keefe, and nothing was done of it. You needed to trade one of Marner or Nylander or Morgan Rielly before the no move and no trades kicked in, and while you still had the assets. Because if you trade off one of Mitch Marner or William Nylander, guess what? You still have Auston Matthews and John Tavares and Morgan Rielly to backstop that, because you're going to lose one player. Your idea in mind is that you're bringing in other types of players or guys who could fulfill the money and the salary cap hit in other ways. Maybe it's two pieces, three pieces, maybe it's a different kind of piece, but you still have all that talent of, you know, a 69 one-time goal scorer, a 69 goal scorer, a guy who won the Rocket Richard Trophy twice, a Hart Trophy. Like, you still have that there. You've got Nylander growing. You've got an older veteran guy and John Tavares still the captain. Like, you had a backstop, even if it was Nylander to go and you keep Marner, you had a backstop. Now you don't. And the biggest thing for me looking at this right now is that you've got Mitch Marner out the door. So you've lost some talent there. You have an aging John Tavares. It's all up to Matthews and Nylander. And sure, they could be a whole lot better. And what I understand about what Rosie's saying is when you get to the playoffs, do those guys wilt and they say, hey, fuck it, this isn't for me. I don't want to play like this. I don't want to be here. I can't handle the playoff style when they get to the playoffs. Is that possible? Entirely. It's actually probably more likely to happen than it isn't because they've proven that. But Michael, the thing for me with wanting to change the coach is less so about like, oh no, you had this guy and you're letting them off the hook by doing that. It's the on-ice product. As the although Tree Living has a lot to do with this and what happened on the ice, a lot of this comes down to Berube, the style of play, the pace of play. They struggle in their defensive zone. The power play's no good. They can't get up ice. And so much of that can be changed with a different coach. You can merge a guy who wants to play a more offensive style and allow more creativity with a guy who's a little bit more of a hard ass. Unfortunately, that guy just got hired by the New York Islanders. I think that would have been the best case scenario, but you can do it. You don't need one or the other, which I think Craig Berube offers the motivational factor. I think his systems and what he can bring to X's and O's lacks. And I think you see that a lot on the ice. Again, Tree Living had a lot to do with that, but I think Berube and his systems made it worse than it needed to be.
Yeah, let's be honest. When they traded for Mitch Marner, they got Nicholas Roy in that trade, if I remember right. And then they traded him to Colorado. You know, so some of that return really isn't there. And you got, I believe it was a first and a fifth for Roy.
Yes, that's correct.
And that first round pick, because Colorado is the President's Trophy winner as of yesterday, is gonna be really late in the
Really
first
late.
round. Yeah, so you're probably not going to be getting a top, like, I mean, I hear this draft's a little deeper, but you're still not going to be getting like a Gavin McKenna type player,
No.
you know, in the first round that late. But it's a great thing, because you mentioned Tree Living, remove it. He was relieved of his duties. Tom Fitzgerald was relieved of his duties in New Jersey as well. We know Barry Trotz announced earlier this season that he is going to be retiring at the end of this season. So they're looking for general manager in Nashville. I mentioned earlier that I have a name that has not been mentioned at all. Ron Hextall. And the reason I say Ron Hextall is a very simple reason. He has not had a true legitimate chance to see his work through. When he was with Philadelphia, he came in with a plan that Ed Snyder approved, which was, hey, we need to get rid of bad contracts. We need to replenish our prospect pool. We need to get things back on track so we can then start moving forward. He was doing that. Snyder passed away. Dave Scott came in. Dave Scott was like, and Dave Scott obviously was from Comcast and was like, oh, well, we just want to make the playoffs. Just so forget your plan. Just go playoffs. They wanted to rush Carter Hart. They wanted to do a trade that made no sense for them to get Jonathan Quick, that Hextall said no to, and eventually got fired. And then they brought in Chuck Fletcher, and look at the mess that created. And now Danny Briere is fixing that and is using Ron Hextall's plan, by the way. They're literally using what Ron Hextall was doing. He goes to Pittsburgh, and if the reports are true, he was supposed to break up the core three of Malkin, Letang, and Crosby to build. Get rid of bad contracts as well, along with that, and rebuild that prospect pool. Lemieux and Burkle sell the team. Fenway Sports comes in. We just want playoffs. Do this. So, both times that he was an actual general manager, he never got to see it through. He's somebody that also worked with Brian Burke in Pittsburgh. So they were aligned in their vision on this is how we need to rebuild this team. I think that could be something, somebody that would be a good option for Toronto if he wants to be a general manager again, because he hasn't been a GM since he left Pittsburgh. I think he's the type of guy who looks at the guys of what there is. He tries to get rid of bad contracts, bring in prospects. Because, like, what do you got? What does Toronto have in the prospect pool?
Yeah, not too much.
Yeah, and that's Hextall's bread and butter, getting things back together so you can start implementing. Like, look at the Caps right now. We're finally doing it. Look at Philadelphia. They're playing a lot of young guys. They're getting them in there, getting that experience that way, because that's what the future is. Younger, faster, hungrier. And that's what, in a way, maybe Toronto needs. And that's why I look at Ron Hextall and go, he could be a good option for Toronto, but he's not being mentioned at all because I guess with the way things in Philly and Pittsburgh went, that's just used as a mark against him.
Yeah, I think that the way things went in Pittsburgh is the one thing that kind of concerns me the most. And I mean, I guess the other part of it would be you bring up the fact that he wanted to go in there and split up that core, if that's the reports are true, and him wanting to break that up. Well, MLSE is not going to let that happen. I don't think that they have any interest in breaking these guys up, and I think they would be much more in line with kind of what you said came in after him and what caused problems for his plan, if those things kind of worked out exactly that way, where they want to make the playoffs again and they want to make the playoffs again next year. And they basically already put it out there that whoever the next GM and president of hockey ops is, you don't even bother coming in and suggesting a rebuild because you're not going to get the job. Don't bother coming in and suggesting breaking these guys up because you're not going to get the job because that's not what they're interested in doing. So I think that that pathway is not going to work out. But yeah, I mean, look, I don't know. I wouldn't put it past MLSE to have an interview with him. It's going to be up to this search firm to go and find who the person is and who the total list of candidates are that they do go and find and bring back to Keith Pelley. I don't know how far that's going to extend and who's going to be on that, but it's definitely going to be interesting to see. I do get the impression, though, that they're looking to more so bring in some fresh blood than anything else.
Yeah, and there's nothing wrong with bringing in fresh blood because, like, it's interesting because when we look at that, we also have to look at Detroit at the same time. Detroit is 3 points out of the wild card right now. Does Steve Yzerman still have a job in Detroit?
Do I think he should? No. Do I think he does? Yes. I don't think that the current iteration of ownership in Detroit is as cutthroat as it used to be. I don't think that they're as,
Because
get
it's
it
Mike
done, get to
Ilitch's
the.
son, right?
Yes, correct. And I don't think that they are the same way that his father was, and the previous people surrounding him to be in there and advise on things where it was so cutthroat. I also kind of feel like they backed themselves into a corner a little bit by having a guy with, effectively royalty to his name in the city of Detroit, right? Like that's kind of what he's done as Steve Yzerman and his playing career and what he did for the Red Wings. Now he comes back to be the GM and he lays out yet again another Iser plan. And it's like, okay, we've got to follow this thing through. I feel like they will look at it and be like, well, we'll give you another year because they're scared to have to do that in a sense and want to give them that little bit of extra leash to kind of try to get out of it and try to fix it again. I don't think that they're going to fire him. I
Yeah.
don't.
Well, not only that, but like look at Tampa. When he left Tampa to go to Detroit, how many years did it take Tampa to actually win the cup? Was it like 1 or 2 years?
One, I think. I think it
Yeah.
was the very next year.
Yeah. So it's like sometimes it's like, because that was also the case when I wrote my docuseries on the 97-98 Washington Capitals. George McPhee came in along with Ron Wilson as coach for the 97-98 season. That was their first season. And yeah, David Poile built the team, but McPhee did those little fixes that ended up taking the Capitals to the Stanley Cup final. plus some luck. So, you know, it's interesting how you kind of look at that sometimes. It's like, you know, you'd pull a GM out and then the next year the team goes because he probably didn't see the thing that was missing truly,
Yeah.
or over or
That
underestimated a piece that
that's the one
could.
thing that I think happens with GMs too, like what happens with some coaches, where some guys just are finishers and some guys are setup men. You know, like you see so often where like a coach will come in and he'll be the guy to take a young group or a fresh group that's together and they've got some budding stars and he kind of grooms them and builds them up and they become a good team and he gets them to the right spot and they get to the playoffs and they're competitive, but he'll never win. And he's got to come out and the new guy's got to come in and it'll be the new guy who takes that guy's team and he goes on to win. You know, like even the Raptors, I saw that here. Dwayne Casey took that Raptors team every single year, basically to the second round or the conference finals, and they could never break through. Some of that probably had to do with LeBron, but regardless, he won the coach of the year. He got fired. And then they brought in Nick Nurse, and he's the one who gets it done. Sometimes it just takes a fresh set of eyeballs to not be so in love with some type of idea or approach or playing style or player. And I think that can happen with a GM too. Like that might be the case with Steve Yzerman, where he can build you a really good program, but maybe he just can't get it done because he falls too in love with. Maybe it's your prospects and the guys that he's drafted. Maybe it's the guys that you have on the team that he's seen come through from day one and he brought in. Maybe it's guys that he signed and he feels attached to. I'm not saying this is the exact case, but you know, that idea of him being there for as long as he has, and kind of similar in Tampa, and similar and different in many ways, but similar in Tampa, where he built that thing up, brought it through, and we all looked at it and kind of said that's Steve Yzerman's team. Kudos to him, and then kudos to Breezewa for getting it over the finish line. It might just be somebody else coming in and being like, I kind of see this differently, and I don't think we need that guy. Or I'm willing to part ways with those picks and those prospects and those players to bring in the pieces that we need. And maybe Steve wasn't willing to do some of that stuff.
Which shifts us back to Toronto, because one thing that Yzerman has done is creating a culture there in Detroit. Is who do you bring in of like some of the names that have been talked about that can truly fix maybe whatever the locker room culture is like? Because in a perfect example, when the Capitals let go of Adam Oates and George McPhee, and they brought in Brian McClellan as general manager and Barry Trotz as coach. It took 4 years to win that Stanley Cup. But the first thing that they did was we're changing the culture in the locker room. They went out, they signed guys like Brooks Orpik and Matt Niskanen to really change the attitude in the locker room of this is how we need to conduct ourselves. You know, who can you see potentially doing that? Maybe not in the general manager realm, but maybe in the coach realm, that's going to make the players listen and really get them to buy into changing the culture in Toronto.
So I think it's got to start at the top, and that would start with a president of hockey ops for me. And I think whoever comes in and takes that position and takes that role has to be willing to be data centric, if you want to consider that and consider the numbers. But they also have to understand hockey and they have to understand what it takes to win and how the game is played. And, you know, more or less, what is wrong with the room and what needs to change in the room. And if they are somebody that can be an all-around kind of utility man in the president role who can understand the game while also on be forward-thinking and be creative and think outside the box of how you want to approach the team and the build and the coaching and the GM and all that kind of stuff, I think it starts in a good place because then you get to a spot where the players will respect you, which I kind of get the feeling just based on what I've seen and heard out of these guys, not anything behind closed doors or anything, all just out public information, at least in Toronto, is that there is a huge disconnect, which, whether they want to admit it or not, leads to a lack of respect, whether that becomes for Pelly or Tree Living or Berube or all of them. It kind of feels like everyone's operating on their own page. And that can't happen. Somebody has to come in, set a tone, lay out how things are going to work, how things are going to run and what the direction and style of the hockey club is going to be. And then it can start from there. Then you bring in your GM and your coach and whatever. And I think if that person can come in and do that, I think you can get the players on board with what needs to happen. One of the main faults with Shanahan, because I know when I'm describing that, I am in a way essentially describing Brendan Shanahan. He does all of those things and understands the game very well. The biggest problem that he had here in Toronto, in my opinion, is that he fell in love with his players and refused to let go. There was no chance they were ever going to trade Marner, Nylander, Matthews, Tavares, Riley. They were not going anywhere. The idea of entertaining a conversation about that wouldn't even come up. They wouldn't do it. And it's great to have trust in your guys and to believe in your guys, but at the same time, it also, in a way, just over time, provides a layer of comfortability. Oh, I don't have to chase this puck down in the corner because I ain't going anywhere. You're not going to sit me and you're not going to trade me. And whether they actively thought that or if it was just subconscious, you could see it take place on the ice. And there was never questions about what they were going to do with these guys. You never struck the fear of God in any of the players where it was like, we will move you. If this doesn't work, we will move you. They were always cushy. And I think somebody's got to come in here and be a little bit more cutthroat, but they also just have to be respected. Like, okay, that's great. Your coach comes in and yells at you and tells you he'll sit you. Does he know hockey? Do the players appreciate what he brings to the table? Do they respect his coaching style? Do they respect his systems? Because if not, then all the threats in the world, they can get lost on you because at the end of the day, they say, guess what, buddy? I make $13 million. I make $11.5 million. You're going to get fired. I ain't going to get traded. So now what? And I think that can create a disconnect. So that's a long way of saying, honestly, I kind of am in love with the idea of hiring Chris Pronger. I don't know if he would want to do it. I don't know if he'd want to be a GM before anything else. If he would want to try his hand at that, I don't know if Gary would want him to jump straight into a president role or what. But that's the kind of guy that I would look at and be like, you make sense for this. He understands the business side. He does know what the marketplace. He understands what it takes to win. He's a scary ass hockey player, but he's a fucking real good one. And I think he's a really smart guy. And I think he's more forward thinking than people want to give him credit for. So that's the kind of guy that I would want in there. If not him, the second guy, it's the guy Merrick's brought up. And again, I don't know what position he'd want to take, but Mike Johnson intrigues the hell out of me. So that's another guy.
Yeah, and it's actually funny that you mentioned that because earlier this season when Jarmo Kekalainen came into Buffalo to replace Kevin Adams, like, what was the one thing that Tage Thompson said when he was asked about it? He came in and says, "You're all replaceable." He put the fear of God into every player in Buffalo. And granted, they were already in that 3-game winning streak at that point, but I think that was because they were realizing that Adams was going to be gone real soon. So it's like, oh, we don't have to worry about this guy. But like Kekalainen came in and just put the fear of God into those guys and was like, you're all replaceable. You're all replaceable. And look at the Sabres now. They're behind Carolina. Carolina is the only team in the East to clinch a division right now, but they're only 2 points behind them. But Carolina has a game in hand, of course, so that will go down to the wire if who gets the East in that case. But yeah, and look at the resurgence of Buffalo. That's probably one of the. I asked this question to Mike Aiello when I had him on a month ago, and I go, did we need the Leafs to suck for the Sabres to be good this season?
What did he say?
He said, no, I don't think so, but because like obviously in the past the Sabres and the Leafs made the playoffs together at the same time, but it's like, but when you look at just like this has been the season of parody. Let's be honest. It's been a season of parody. Who would have thought the Rangers would have had the season that they had with Mike Sullivan behind the helm for the first season? Who would have thought Toronto would have had the season that they would have had? Nobody was predicting that. Nobody expected to see the Capitals where they are right now. Nobody thought they were going to see the Panthers where they are right now, although that was more injuries related than
For
anything.
sure.
Nobody saw it with the Devils. It's like you look at all these teams and going like, Buffalo's in the playoffs. We didn't see that coming. Right now, currently, Pittsburgh and Philly are in the playoffs. Nobody saw that coming.
Yep.
And you got Boston and Ottawa in the wild card. So the East has been the season of parity.
Well, even look at the West too. Like I keep joking about it. It's ridiculous. I'm doing scoreboard watching as a Leafs fan because I'm willing it to happen for the Maple Leafs to get a top five overall pick. Like I'm begging for them to get a top five overall pick. The team that's in their way, Michael, is the Seattle Kraken, who, by the way, with a win last night, kept their playoff hopes alive. What the hell are we doing?
Yeah, it's crazy. It's like I'm looking at them now, and like, to be honest, the only team that I'm generally surprised by is Utah. It's Utah. Like Winnipeg being out, yeah, that's a an eye scr or a head scratcher. I was going to say an eye scratcher. That would
Eye
be very
scratcher.
painful.
Yeah, I don't want to deal with that.
As somebody who has to wear contacts when they play hockey, yeah, no, don't scratch your eye.
Yeah.
But like, yeah, Winnipeg's the one head scratcher, but like Utah, I would say, is the surprise. I'm not surprised by Anaheim with Joel Quenneville behind the helm. They were a veteran coach away, in my eyes, from making the playoffs with that roster that Pat Verbeek is, who just signed a multi-year extension today. I think they like the Ducks are exactly where they should be. And then when you look at the Central Division, it's exactly what we expected it to be, which was Colorado, Dallas, Minnesota, with Winnipeg being the outlier because they're kind of sloping down after winning the President's Trophy last year, especially with the way the playoffs went for them last year.
Yeah.
Like they couldn't win on the road.
Yeah.
They just couldn't. So, yeah, I see it, and it's like, well, as long as Edmonton doesn't have to play LA, I think Edmonton should be okay.
Yeah, no kidding.
5 years in a row. If that happens 5 years in a row in the first round, we are changing the format to 1v8, no questions asked.
No, they'll find a way. They'll find a way. They'll find a way where LA will sneak in as the eight, Edmonton will be the one, and we'll be looking at it going, are you kidding me? We changed this again because you idiots keep running into each other in the first round, and now you're doing this to us here? Really?
Really? Like The Miz, really?
Yeah.
I'm a wrestling
Really?
fan too, so I we could do the wrestling references all we want here too. So so it's interesting. I know Nashville's been doing their search a lot longer. You have to wonder what happens to Andrew Brunette. You have to wonder what, obviously, in your mind, Berube's gone at the end of the season.
Yeah.
That's a fair sentiment. Chris Knobloch, depending on how Edmonton does in the playoffs, could be a potential. I mean, if they go to the cup final again, they lose again, it's like you got to change the coach.
Yes.
You're going to have to. And then John Tortorella can just finish his audition with Vegas and go right to Edmonton.
Yeah.
My
Yeah.
dad still believes that Tortorella is the guy that Edmonton needs to get over the hump.
Yeah, I mean, maybe I could see it. I thought it was going to be Pete DeBoer. I genuinely thought it was going to be Pete DeBoer. You know who I could see ending up in Edmonton this summer? Bruce Cassidy.
Yeah, Cassidy's got a cup. Won it his first year in Vegas too, after getting let go surprisingly by Boston. Yeah, I could see
Knows the Western
Cassidy.
Conference.
Yeah, that would work. I could see that. So, but something that we can't see coming, because we don't know what's happening, is Alex Ovechkin.
Yes.
Obviously, it came out the other day that Ovechkin is going to decide over the summer what he's going to do, which to me feels very on par to a walking away without ceremony because he loved the way Gretzky did it. And one of the guys who I text all the time, he is dead set that Ovechkin is using this just as a ploy on Chris Patrick, who I don't think is a good general manager. We can get into that conversation another day, to put pressure on Chris Patrick to make moves that need to be done, because he's been saying since the summer, we need a top six forward. 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 He has not brought in a top six forward. We have the hunk of meat line with the Protiss brothers and Tom Wilson now. That's an improvement. Yes,
£700 line.
I'm literally calling that line the hunk of meat line.
It's a good line. It's a good name for them.
If anyone creates t-shirts, royalties right here.
Yeah, exactly. You just need like you need to put just sticks of ground beef with like stick legs and hockey sticks in their hands, and that's what you need to do. And then put their numbers on them, and then you could sell that line.
Yes, the hunk of meat line. But, we're finally seeing some of the young kids come up. Like Ivan Mereschenko is getting some opportunities now. Ilya Protas just played his first game. Cole Hutson's finally up. I'm not going to lie. Before John Carlson was traded, I thought Rasmus Sandin was going to be the one to get traded to fit in Cole Hutson. Because when I looked at the depth and everything like that, that's who I saw as the odd man out. And then end up Carlson being the guy getting traded. I think that was because he probably wanted too many years. I'm just gonna, that's my thought. The term was not right. Chris Patrick could say standings all he wants, but again, who knows what he was thinking going into that trade deadline? Because we're all scratching our heads here in DC going, what the hell is going on here? But
I also wonder if they just didn't expect to have an offer for John Carlson, and when one came through that was the package that it was, he looked at it and said, I have to do this.
well, apparently, according to Patrick, Verbeek has been asking about Carlson for a couple of years now.
Yeah.
So they
He might have
just.
just come in over the top and had that offer where he said, hey, I'll do this. And Chris Patrick didn't think it was going to come, and he said, okay, fine.
Let's do it.
Yeah.
So, but Ovechkin, going back to him, I think. While I agree with my friend that this could be a ploy on Chris Patrick to make him like put pressure on him to make some moves to kind of change the direction of the team a little bit, which I do think part of that direction is an Ilya Protas and Mershenko, a Cole Hutson, Andrew Kristol, who has not had a chance to come up just yet, getting those guys into the mix with getting another top six forward to complement. Because let's also be honest, whoever that top six forward that is going to come in is eventually going to have to be the one to replace Ovechkin. And that's a tall task here in DC for the Caps. And so that's why it's important to get Protas, Crystal, and these other kids up here playing because we need to see what they can do. But who knows? We'll see. But I think, and this is in my heart, I've been saying this since the summer, I think this is it for Ovi. If the
I
Caps
think
are,
this is it.
if the Caps are out of the playoffs tomorrow, Saturday, or at the time of recording today, or at time of listening to this today, I don't see Ovechkin playing in Columbus on Tuesday. I don't.
Really?
Yeah. Even
I think he's
though
gonna play. I think he'll play on Tuesday.
if the Caps are out of the playoffs,
Yeah.
his last game will be at home because if he does decide that he's going to retire, which is what we both think he's going to do, at least the last game is at home. It would be apropos for it to be against Columbus because that's who his opponent was in his first career NHL game. But that game was at home, not on the road, when Ovechkin debuted. So it would be ironic that it's like, okay, you started your career against Columbus, you end your career
Now
against
you end it.
Columbus,
Yeah.
but at the same time, like, and I was listening to the sheet on Thursday's episode when Greg Wyshynski and Merrick were talking about, Wish came up with the thing about like how both Crosby and Mal and Ovechkin at the end of the game like swap jerseys at the end of the game, like that be the send off, and I'm like, oh, that's good. I like that. That
I think that would be great.
and you don't have Ovechkin playing Columbus just as a precaution in case he does in fact retire. So the last thing you ever see him do is that. I'm
Well, I
like,
think if
oh,
he's
that's
going to retire, or I think if he does that, he's going to retire. If they do a jersey swap, that's gotta be it. It would
well.
be nuts if he does a jersey swap and then that isn't it in that game. But look, I think he's gonna play in Columbus no matter what. I think he'll finish it out there. And the perfect pitch, like storybook picture perfect ending is Crosby at home, wrap it up that way. That's the way to do it. Like, that is the storyline of all storylines for these two and their careers. But
And who
I don't
did
think it's going to
Gretzky
be
and
the
the
case.
Rangers play their who did Gretzky play against in his final game again?
Was it the Oilers? I don't know.
No.
I don't.
Wayne Gretzky's last game was at home at Madison Square Garden against the Pittsburgh Penguins.
Okay.
So how ironic would it also be? Both Gretzky and Ovechkin's last NHL games are
Against
against
the
the Penguins.
Penguins. Yeah,
That would be
I
interesting.
think he's gonna play on the Tuesday. I do.
Wait, you brought up something. We talked about jersey swaps. I want to bring this up real quick. I actually have this written down. So we know that Ovechkin has always done jersey swaps and equipment swaps and stuff like that because he's going to build this museum in Russia, which he says that he's hoping to have it open in 2027. Capitol's social media had started sharing some of the jersey swaps in the month of November, starting November 6th in Pittsburgh with Evgeny Malkin, then in Florida with Brad Marchand, then the 17th against LA with Anze Kopitar, because obviously he's retiring at the end of the season. Then against Edmonton with Connor McDavid. And then on the 28th, which I believe that was Black Friday, against Toronto with Austin Matthews. The Capitals were showing on social media these jersey swaps, which we all knew, and it started getting talk going up. Notice how that stopped after the one with Austin Matthews. Because Ovi, and I would not be surprised because I would not, Ovi probably told him, please stop posting it on social media. I don't want it on social media. I don't want the attention of it.
Yeah, I could see that. That would make sense.
Because
That would make sense.
we saw the thing from Nick Kypreos at Sportsnet saying that like Ovi really liked what Gretzky did when he retired. And I actually watched the Ultimate Gretzky documentary recently. And John Davidson asked Gretzky straight up, hey, could you have done one more year?
Right.
And Gretzky said, I could have. I still could have played one more year and turned it into a multi-city tour. But the problem with that is that it becomes disingenuous to my teammates because all the attention is sewn on him.
Right.
It's not on the team. It's not about the team trying to make the playoffs or anything like that. It's just about, hey, it's Gretzky's farewell.
Right.
You're kind of gonna, if Ovi comes back next season, you know it's gonna become a three-ring circus like the way it was when he was chasing Gretzky.
I do think he'll go out. He's no matter what, he's going to go out quietly. That's kind of why I think he's doing it this way, and that's why I think that this will be the end. The other thing too that's kind of tipping me off here or giving me that inkling that it's going to happen is twofold. One, I don't know if you watched the game in Toronto and in the pregame stuff. I don't know if you saw what happened.
I
He
had the
took
miss.
pucks from the warm-up.
So he does that every game. Now, the question is, how many pucks did he take? Did he take two or did he take
Right.
more? So if
Right.
it's two pucks, those are for his children. He does that every game because I actually stand at the Capitals bench for pregame warmups.
Okay.
And every game, he picks up two pucks, hands it over to the equipment guy.
Right.
And then sometimes he says, hey, Holt, keep it right there. My sons are right there. I'm going to hand it to them myself. Or he hands it to his kids after the game. So those pucks,
Okay.
so those two pucks, that is an every game occurrence, and those are for his children.
Okay, yeah. So I don't know how many he grabbed, but that was one of the things. The other one that to me is the most interesting one, which they did talk about on the sheet, but the more I'm seeing it, the more I think there's something to this, is every time they go to a new city here, or every time they go post something new here right now on the new on the socials, it's something from this season honoring Ovechkin's historic season. You know, it's towels and stuff about what they're gonna do on Sunday and all these things for his final home game and what they're gonna, how they're gonna honor all these incredible moments
And
from this year.
I have something pulled up, and I'm going to
Okay.
put this up on YouTube for everyone to see. But while I was out doing Instacart and talking to you to set up the time we're going to record, the Washington Capitals released a greatness towel that will go to all fans in attendance on Sunday. And it has Ovi from the draft, him with the subway, him with the cup, him with the goat, him from the All-Star when he had the silly hat on when he teamed up with Malkin real quick. So it's got him obviously doing the dive on his belly when he scored 8.95. So it's they have a greatness towel that will be given out on Sunday. And I think what was the other thing? Oh, and then obviously there's a poster for everybody, but that has a few guys from the team on the poster. So you're right, there is a towel. They just announced it today.
That's it. It just makes you feel like they're getting prepared for this to be Ovi's last game, and they're gonna put this thing up on a pedestal and have it ready because they can't say and they maybe don't know. So they want to make sure that no matter what happens, he does get some type of send off here. Where if it is a final send off, they've at least done something and then he can do it on his own terms in the summer. And if it isn't, then they haven't overdone it so that when they do have the final send off, they still have that room to go bigger and go grander.
So I'm going to have to ask you this. It's technically a two-parter. In Pittsburgh, how many standing ovations does Alex Ovechkin get? Because if you remember, when Gretzky played his last game in Ottawa, which was his last game in Canada, he got three standing ovations. How many does he? How many does Ovi get potentially get in Pittsburgh?
I don't know. I'm very curious how this is going to be played out in Pittsburgh and in Columbus because I think a lot of people are spending a lot of money on these tickets with the anticipation that it's going to be his final one and there's going to be something that's done to honor him. I don't know. I think he gets some strong recognition. Let's put it that way. I don't know how many. I think no matter what, at the end of each game, you're probably going to see a salute from the fans. I don't know that the players go out and shake hands with him. I think that would be a little egregious, especially if he wants to do this thing quietly. Like if Sunday rolls around and all of a sudden the players are shaking Ovi's hand after the game, we're all kind of going to look at it and go, "Oh, what the fuck?" But
Well, the funnier thing is, could you imagine in Pittsburgh, Marc-Andre Fleury just shows up?
Sounds like a one day PTO plays in the game or something.
One day Pete, one day contract just to be on the bench, just to mess with Ovi in Pittsburgh. Oh, that would be funny.
It would be funny. It would be funny. Like the ghost of Marc-Andre Fleury just towering down over Ovi. It would be funny.
Actually, he wouldn't even need to sign a PTO. He just could just show up,
Be in the arena.
just be in like the press box somewhere, just like looking down on Ovi, like, I see you. I know you got a cup over me, but I still see you. So, but all I know is, and I'm gonna let everyone know this because obviously, for those who follow me on TikTok, the TXHT Instagram, Facebook, I post the videos of the players walking out on the ice for pregame warmups. Logan Thompson, I am so sorry, Logan, if you feel like I've objectified you, doing his water thing. Yeah, those videos, if you've seen those videos, those are me where he does like the pregame ritual. I'm going to be putting a bit more focus, obviously, on Ovechkin. I'm going to record him doing his ritual at the bench where he does the thing with the water bottle and maybe with his stretches. I'm going to try to have the camera on him video wise, not picture wise, where he when he's on the ice and potentially in scoring opportunities, I want to try to get as much as that as I can and put together up a nice little reel thing for TikTok and Instagram, Facebook for, in case it is the last time I get to see him live. So.
I mean that'll be cool. I considered going to the game in Toronto here because I wanted to kind of get to see him, but I was like, I do the post game show for the Leafs as well, so I go live immediately after the game and I have to get back here quick, and it's usually only worthwhile for me to go if I can get cheap tickets and get in, get out. And because there's an also an understanding this could be the last one. I know a lot of people left early, but those tickets weren't cheap. So I was
Well,
like, I don't think this is going to work.
a lot of people left early because the Toronto Maple Leafs did not do their job.
Yeah, they suck. They don't want to do their jobs.
So, but yeah, but like I think we're definitely in agreement that Ovi's this is near the end
It
for
feels like
Ovechkin.
the
Yeah,
end.
it
Yeah.
like it, and here's the thing. I want to put this in perspective. We're both hockey players ourselves. You and I, Zach. You know, hilariously, you'll find this funny. I am 1 year, 2 weeks younger than Ovechkin.
Okay.
Ovi was born September 17th, 1985. I was born October 1st, 1986. There's literally a year and 2 weeks between us.
Get.
When Ovi went number one, did you know that I was actually draft eligible for the NHL draft?
No, I did not know that.
I was, because almost everybody who played in USA Hockey was essentially eligible. Whether or not you're getting looked at, that's another story.
Fair.
So
Yep.
I sucked as an ice hockey player. That's why I play ball hockey now. But at least I'm honest with myself. But the thing is, though, is that I understand, and you understand, the wear and tear that this game puts on our bodies.
Yep.
We never played at the level like Ovechkin. And actually, I pulled this up when I was having a conversation with somebody. You know, when you look at Ovechkin's career, and I got to pull this up super fast. Where is it? Stats. I like how you Google on the sheet. I do the same thing too on the More Phenomenal Hockey Show. So Ovechkin has played 1,570 games before these two games against Pittsburgh and potentially the game against Columbus. He has
Yep.
928 goals, which is obviously 928 more than either of us combined in anything. I know I haven't scored a goal in the NHL.
I have not come close.
He has 756 assists, 1,684 points. And when I looked at it Wednesday night, he has over 3,700 hits. He is the hits leader actively. Can
Wow.
you imagine the actually, let me see if that Google search is still up. Yeah, there it is right there. Let's see if my number's right. 3,870 career hits. He is the active leader in career hits right now.
Wow.
This is another reason why I think he's retiring. To play the way he has for 21 seasons,
Physically demanding.
the physical demand, like I remember when Justin Williams retired. And I remember when Brooks Orpik retired, there were things that those guys said about the preparation that they had to do just to get ready to play.
Yeah.
And that's what I see with Ovechkin. I could see him go, he's going to go to the KHL. He's going to play for Moscow Dynamo. I actually heard something that after a year of playing for them, he might buy the team.
I can
That,
see that little Jager situation.
yeah, that when I heard that a couple weeks ago, I was like, that's, I didn't think about that.
Yeah.
So,
I could see that playing and then just transitioning into some type of ownership of that team. Yeah, that would make
yeah.
sense.
And then one way or the other, we all know Ovechkin's eight's going to go up in the rafters. They will not retire his nit number league wide like they did Gretzky. That honor really just goes to Gretzky at this point. I don't see how you can
I
retire
don't
the.
think they'll no, I don't think that they'll retire league wide. I think at this point
The
it'll
Caps.
just be in Washington.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
Yeah.
it's
I also
funny.
think the same thing will happen for Sid in
Pittsburgh.
Pittsburgh, where he gets his number retired there and it won't be league wide.
Yeah, it was interesting because somebody, I forget who brought it up. It might have been Wish brought it up on a earlier episode earlier in the season about it. And I was like thinking about it. I'm like, it doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense to retire eight league wide.
No.
Because then you screw over guys like Cale Makar.
Yeah, true. Yeah, no, I don't think that that'll happen.
Yeah. So with that, Zach, where can the people find you on social media, my friend?
You can find me on Twitter at Zach Phils, ZACKPHILL. As well, obviously, make sure to check out the Leafs Nation. That's Leafs Nation After Dark. I do the post game show. It's coming to an end here, only three games left. But you can also find me on the Sheet with Jeff Merrick, Monday to Friday. 1 p.m. Eastern time. So make sure to check us out there. That's where you can get me talking hockey.
Yeah. And then, of course, obviously for me, you can follow everything for the Morphinama Hockey Show via TXHT at TXHT underscore hockey, TXHTHockey.com. And then, obviously, for myself at the Lindenbaum 75, which, as you could tell, there's a llama right here. It is because Saturday, April 11th, which is probably when you're listening to this, I am making my debut in the National Ball Hockey League as part of Tier 3 Maryland. And you can buy merch.
That's some awesome merch.
Buy my merch. No, no, I'm excited. I'm nervous. I'm ready to rock and roll. I'm going to be a third line center, which is hilarious because I play left wing and I'm just being put there because I can take faceoffs. But I just found out that I'm also going to be on the second power play unit and the second penalty kill unit. So it's like, all right, this is going to be pretty cool.
Nice.
I'm ready to rock and roll. Let's do this thing.
Nice. That's
So,
exciting.
yeah, go to NBH. I think it's NBHL.com, or just look up the National Ball Hockey League. Look up the Delmarva Llamas and Tier 3 Maryland, which is out of Rockville, Maryland. Check that out, and then I'll have a link if you actually do want to buy llamas gear, just for
That's pretty cool.
just because. Why not? So with that, I'm Michael. He is Zach. Check out the sheet. Check out Leafs Nation. Your suffering is almost over, Zach.
Yes, we're almost done.
It's
Almost
almost
done.
over. It's almost over, at least for the Leafs, not with the sheet. But
Yeah.
because you're going to British Columbia soon.
Yes, tomorrow
Yes.
morning. When people are
Yes.
listening to this, I'll probably be on a plane.
Yep. So, with that, until next time, we will see you on the ice.